On behalf of the Improvement Science Research Network, I would like to welcome everyone to today's webinar entitled, Improving Our Work is Our Work, the Climate for Improvement. My name is Frank Puga, and I'm a research scientist with the ISIRN Coordinating Center. The Improvement Science Research Network is a one-of-its-kind national practice-based research network whose mission is to enhance the scientific foundation for quality improvement, safety, and efficiency through transdisciplinary research addressing healthcare delivery, patient-centeredness, and integration of evidence into practice. The ISRN is the only improvement research network sponsored by the National Institutes of Health and has a long-standing commitment to evidence-based quality improvement. We are very excited about today's topic and glad to see that you share enthusiasm by your attendance. In fact, we will poll the audience in a few minutes to get a better sense of who has joined us today. We also welcome your thoughts on other topics we can address in future web events. At the end of today's session, you will be asked to complete a brief evaluation form. Please be sure to give us your feedback, since comments will help us to plan future events. Next slide, please. While we don't anticipate any technical problems, I would like to give you a few tips in case you experience any difficulty. For help, please notify the ISRN Coordinating Center through the questions window. If you have trouble with the slides or have problems with your connection to the web event, try pressing S5 to refresh your screen. Also, the webinar is being recorded. A download of this recording, the slides, and a transcript will be on the ISRN website soon. Next slide, please. Note that you can submit questions at any time through the question window at the bottom of the presentation screen, as pictured in the screenshot. We will answer your questions following our speakers' presentations. Next slide, please. To listen to this webinar, it is preferred that you use speakers connected to your computer. Make sure that the mic and speakers is selected in your audio options window. If you do not have speakers on your computer, you may also use your phone to listen to today's presentation. To do this, please dial the number on your screen and enter the unique access code and audio PIN in the audio options window. Make sure the telephone option is selected in the audio window. Next slide, please. Before I turn the program over to our presenters, I would like to get a sense of who we have in the audience today. Please answer the polling question you now see on your screen, describing your role among the categories listed. They are frontline clinical, management, academic faculty, clinical educator, research or scientist, and other healthcare professional. I see from today's poll that we have 13% of you are from frontline clinical professions, 21% represent management, 26% represent academic faculty and clinical educator, 16% represent researcher scientist, and 25% represent other healthcare professional. We welcome all of you to today's presentation. Today's presentation, Improving Our Work is Our Work, the Climate for Improvement, promises an interesting discussion of quality improvement in the clinical setting. Next slide, please. Our presenters will discuss the system and structure necessary to make improvements and describe the essential roles of the individual microsystem and system. We hope that this afternoon's discussion will provide a model for shifting the workforce towards the responsibility of best practice. As you listen to today's presentation, think about how an academic practice partnership and using the ISRN as a platform can help create a quality improvement work that is grounded in rigorous scientific methods in order to generate innovative initiatives that are effective, generalizable, and capable of sustainment. Now, I'm delighted to introduce our two speakers for today's session, Ms. Kathy Rick and Ms. Roxanne Rush. Ms. Kathy Rick is the Chief Nursing Services Officer for the Department of Veteran Affairs. Ms. Rick provides leadership and guidance to the VA's 75,000 nursing personnel who care for more than 5 million veterans each year. As the Chief Nurse Executive for the VA, Ms. Rick is responsible for administering the VA National Strategic Plan. National goals include strategies to enhance leadership excellence, evidence-based practice, informatics, career development, and workforce, nursing practice transformation, nursing research, advanced practice nursing, and collaboration with academic affiliates and professional organizations. Nursing staff members across the 1,300 VA sites have been affected positively by the work related to these strategic goals. These accomplishments provide useful examples for the entire professional nursing community. Ms. Rick is also a member of the inaugural steering council of the Improvement Science Research Network. This group of nationally renowned experts helps advance knowledge in healthcare improvements and guides the ISRN's activities and national research priorities. Ms. Roxanne Rush has 30 years of healthcare clinical and managerial experience. The administrative and educational profile in BHA has been crafted by her various roles as nurse manager, district peer review organization coordinator, Western Region Joint Commission accreditation consultant, clinical information system strategist, clinical quality specialist and performance management, clinical specialist for policy analysts and forecasting, and the associate chief quality and performance officer for strategic initiatives in BHA. Ms. Rush currently serves as the acting assistant deputy under Secretary for Health for quality, safety, and value in BHA, where she has been assigned responsibility for reorganizing BHA around the concepts and precepts of high-performing organization. I will now turn this presentation over to Roxanne, and we look forward to your discussion today.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you. Today's virtual discussion will focus in part one on one healthcare system's delivery story in creating a system for improvement. First, we'll discuss the critical imperatives facing healthcare in an era of reform. Next, we'd like to explore the notion of value-driven healthcare and the VA's evolving definition. We will then explore how a culture of mindfulness, cemented with integrity, supports our critical shift toward the goal of high-reliability systems. Finally, I will discuss how the concepts of enterprise risk awareness and management, reinforced with improvement capability and standardization at the most fundamental level, will support these transitions. I, along with Kathy, hope that this discussion of our conceptual and strategic reorganization approaches to achieve this new value equation will help you as you creatively solve these dilemmas within your own organization. In part two, Kathy will give VA examples of the macro microsystem structures, process, and outcomes to give a little more gravity to our topic. Next slide. As you are well aware, there are many uncertainties and risks facing us. Today's healthcare is characterized by spiraling costs without commensurate gains in quality. Uncertainty persists about the effectiveness, efficacy, and value of care. With an underinvestment in population health and an over-reliance on practice incentives that lead to unintended consequences, daily, we all observe misuse of care based on patient preference, and overuse of supply-sensitive care by regions of the country when we know that more care really isn't always better. We continue to observe underuse of effective evidence-based care where uncertain or marginal benefit of intervention, medications, and technology are noted. Moreover, there's a clear void in scientific evidence to guide even the most common clinical decisions. System complexity often leads to higher than needed levels of intensity of service, care fragmentation, and failure to manage capacity. These are all very critical shortfalls as changes in population health are occurring around us daily. And no doubt, undue focus on unit price and discrete episodes of care that are episodic yields uncertain value, allows us to see uncoordinated transitions, and poor patient satisfaction. No doubt, delivering greater value is a central theme for all of us in healthcare reform in the United States. Next slide. But to further provide context to this important concept of the imperative facing the healthcare system, it's really important that we consider the high-risk environment within which we operate in healthcare. We no doubt operate in an unforgiving social and political environment where daily in the newspaper we see that isolated failures are often extrapolated as system-wide failures. VHA, like all of you, uses complex processes to manage complex technology, with the potential for surprises and unintended consequences when the plethora of human factors, operating practices, and system variation take over. And no doubt, healthcare, by its very nature, has limited opportunities for learning through experimentation. Finally, VHA has widespread accountability on many important fronts with significant sanctions for substandard performance, as do each of you in your healthcare systems. This perfect storm in healthcare of volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous context really creates a very high-risk imperative for us, an urgent imperative to shift to systems, processes, and practices, as well as a culture that systematically anticipates, prevents, and mitigates risk and harm before it occurs. Systems that produce high reliability and constant organizational learning. Next slide. And thus, really the challenge before us is how do we reduce costs and improve efficiency without compromising safety, outcomes, and valued innovation? How do we make this transition as a group of healthcare organizations and the community context to a culture of high reliability in an organization that produces value and learning? Well, for us, several convergent paths lay ahead as we redefine excellence in the 21st century. We in VHA made several assumptions that we knew we were a healthcare system first that wanted to shift away from traditional fix on failure, as I already mentioned, and move more toward proactive emphasis on risk prevention and the systematic progressive elimination of root cause of harm and risk of all types. We knew that we wanted to move away from programmatic silos and really to a notion of enterprise-wide approaches, partnerships, cross-functional teams, with shared accountability for results in generating and escalating our organizational mindfulness and comprehensive awareness of risk and its synergistic nature all around us. We also wanted to move away from duplicate and redundant program functions and really move to a system that contemplated vertical and horizontal alignment and integration of programmatic entities so that we would seamlessly span the entire continuum of care and traditional quality assurance, quality internal controls, our continuous improvement, and our breakthrough quality and innovation processes to industry standard. Above all, we, just like you, wanted to maintain a singular and unified clarity around our goal of being patient-centered, where activated patients with superior levels of health literacy and engagement were the norm. And so we turned first to our definition of value. Next slide. As you know, there really is no universally agreed upon industry definition of healthcare value, but this is, I think, where the conversation needs to begin. Typically, the value equation is defined as quality relative to cost, but we're painfully aware that value as a concept is largely unmeasured and misunderstood. In our healthcare systems, it masquerades as accountability around a myriad of often conflicting performance goals, like access and service quality satisfaction. This in turn leads to divergent approaches, gaming, slow progress to improvement, and really an organizational default to reliance on measurement of processes that really deal with just one episode of care at a time, rather than looking at the longitudinal continuum of care and keeping that in focus. As an organization, we really want to, as you note in the next two bullets, to really begin the conversation around a new value equation for healthcare in the context of high reliability with the patient at the center. This conversation compelled us to examine the notion of both benefits realization, cost of value-added and non-value-added activities, because really that's the true cost of care. And this is really where our improvement science really comes to bear. Again, as Porter recommends, as you can see on the far right side, we first and foremost began the conversation around defining value around our patient, and thus achieving high-value care for patients really for all of us becomes the overarching goal of healthcare delivery, with value defined as health outcomes achieved per dollar spent with the least waste and non-value-added activities. In this context, the creation of value, in our case, veterans, determines the rewards for all the other actors in the system. Next slide. But really, the veteran-centered definition of values is had to be evolved to reflect the simultaneous achievement of a balanced approach to value generation. We know that quality is not free, and thus, viewing quality in isolation is not appropriate. We must view this new value equation with a triangulated approach, and many of you might recognize this as sort of a triple aims type notion, one that improves population health in the context of community, creates a seamless patient experience, and really reduces per capita cost and removes waste and promotes efficiency, all leading to better care, better health, and efficiency at the critical intersections. Above all, for us, value emphasizes customer service and high levels of patient and family engagement throughout the patient-centered experience of coordinated care. And I really know that's a mouthful, but this is such a critical concept. So what is VA doing? We're developing a conceptual framework and operational approach for integrating a stronger focus on value at many levels of the system. And just a couple of the industry standard benchmarks we're looking toward are the IHI, Healthcare Financial Management Association, Institute of Medicine, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, Partners for Value-Driven Healthcare, Commonwealth Fund, Quality Alliance Steering Committee, Bipartisan Policy Center, and Harvard Business School. And so as we're moving to the next slide, we'd like to poll each of you. Typically, as I mentioned, the value equation has been defined as outcomes and experience in relation to cost. The industry is shifting toward defining value as emphasizing really the patient experience, cost, and promotion of population health over the long term. Which of these components, if you'll tell us, has your organization started to use to define value? A, patient experience, B, cost, C, population health, or D, one or more of the above? That's exciting. 69% said one or more of the above. This is a fabulous news and really very consistent with, I think, the direction of the healthcare organizations. Really, but crafting an organizational definition of the goal toward value creation really, as you know, is only the first step to position us for high reliability and learning. So I'd like to talk next about the strategies and tactics that will really help us assess our organization's risk exposure and managing both uncertainty and managing how we manage our knowledge about producing value when all of this is becoming really complex. We think that several elements are very essential, and I've listed them here, and we'll talk a little bit about them in future slides. First and foremost, it goes without saying that strategic clarity and alignment of the mission, vision, and strategies with customers, your markets, and internal competencies of your staff and workforce are really critical to delivering value. We also must articulate clear aims, and these aims can't just be at the corporate level or the network level or your regional level. They have to be cascaded throughout the organization. We also think that this value-driven proposition mandates a change in how we really think about uncertainty and risk. And as you know, any organizational change of this magnitude is both a cultural and a knowledge change. Organizations that want to really move toward a high reliability system need to change behaviors away from the tendency for categorical thinking, away from automatic behavior, away from the tendency for a singular point of view, and away from policy and protocol only behavior, and really away from a failure to manage risk. We know that these habits make us more likely to become immune to the risks all around us. We need to move toward a state of situational awareness, being more aware of really what's happening around us to understand how information, events, and our actions will impact the organizational goals and objectives. The lack of situational awareness is really a significant contributor to human error in organizations operating in high-risk environments, such as healthcare. Thus, it is really critical that we employ an enterprise-wide approach to risk management. And so let's look at really high-risk, this high-risk environment and our notion here. We know that high reliability systems demonstrate at the most fundamental level the capacity for resilience and organizational learning. But if you go to the next slide, you know that healthcare organizations across the industry are really embracing the concept of value and its interdependent elements of accountability, quality, safety, efficiency, and high reliability. And as you can see from our research in internal in VHA, it really indicates that these capabilities must be coupled with a highly receptive organizational culture, exceptional levels of operational integration between clinical and other functions, and no doubt, strong leadership. Next slide. As I just mentioned, we really think that this value-driven approach mandates a change in how we think about uncertainty and risk. We must become more situationally aware, more interdependent, more integrated and aligned, more proactive rather than reactive and act organization-wide or a wing-to-wing, value stream to value stream, rather than maintaining our silos. We have to be more consultative and enabling in our pursuit of this new value equation. And so mindful organizations really continuously build on people's capability so that they can act on what they see. A framework to enable organizational mindfulness, as I note here, is really known as the concept of enterprise risk management. ERM enables healthcare organizations to better understand their risk so that exposure to loss can be minimized, care delivery enhanced, and the overall corporate stewardship, reputation, and value can be improved. This iterative approach is not only a process, but also a discipline and a practice to create real value in any organization. So let's take a quick look at how VHA has reorganized to accommodate these principles and precepts and underlying assumptions that we just described. Next slide. First, we've really integrated a variety of compliance, accreditation, and oversight functions in a unified manner to create an integrated, industry standard approach to compliance with applicable laws, regulations, and standards. This approach for us has really allowed us to move from a rules-based, checkbox, one-size-fits-all culture to a values-based one where we act with integrity to become more self-auditing as we verify our most fundamental practices toward accountability. And this really serves for us as a strong foundation for high reliability and improvement. Secondly, we've aligned a variety of traditional quality, safety, and risk functions that have been largely focused on peer review and reactive approaches after events or failures have occurred to an enterprise-wide approach that mitigates and proactively prevents organizational risks of all types. And we've begun to introduce concepts consistent with this ERM approach I just described. Third, we've united, for us, our improvement capability, what we had typically called systems redesign, our engineering and human factors expertise, our ISO 9000 discipline and internal control mechanisms, and our utilization management capabilities to create an organizational-wide capacity to continuously improve toward this goal of high reliability, standardization, and predictability. All of these alignments led to the goal of being value-driven with the creation of, for us, an integrated strategy to provide a broad-based glimpse of the organization's value-producing performance and metrics, satisfaction levels, and those types of outcome metrics are really central here. Focus here, then, remains on organizational learning, maintaining our focus on the veterans and our patients, achieving results toward that end, understanding and engaging our customers, including our internal customers and workforce, and improving the core competencies of our workforce in accomplishing this ambitious agenda for VHA. In other words, moving the organization away from coastline, superficial studies of healthcare and toward an in-depth knowledge of how we produce true value for every patient who walks through our door to an N of one, but to do so with the insight and knowledge gained from engaging 2.6 million veterans. Next slide, please. So let's drill down into just a few other final comments on framework before I turn it over to Kathy. And just for a bit of a visual depiction of into our integrated framework, you can see that a series of iterative strategies that drive risk awareness, understanding our gaps and inefficiencies, introduce standardization and common platforms, and reduce variation, and really build on the continuous capability to improve are all essential components of this framework toward excellence. And I just put that in a graphical depiction there for you. I also wanted to show you our current improvement framework and model called VATAMICS. And this is our current model for continuous improvement. Our improvement model reflects both this needed leadership involvement we discussed earlier, the cultural integration that we described, and the strategic clarity with aims cascading throughout the organization, as you can see. Next slide. In other words, if you really think about it, we're really just a value stream, high reliability, and the continuous systematic improvement in our organization is really just a value stream. And here's how we might envision these concepts, and I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I hope you agree, and maybe can add some things to this graphic output. And so finally, I just wanted to leave you with a couple really practical examples. And so to supply in the next slide, one further grain of detail as I close, I mentioned the notion of strategic and reliability business intelligence as well as health information technology maximization. So here is a final look at the basic framework for high reliability, and you can see that it really looks at aligning quality objectives and so forth. And as you look at the very last slide as an example, in VHA of high reliability in action, our product in this example is providing only the care needed at the right time, in the right place, for the right patient, and for the right reason. We use a rigorous evidence-based industry standard tool to promote real-time review of our inpatient days of care, so every patient gets a utilization management daily review. An IT solution called NUMI allows us to submit the review to an immediate database with a reason code for the delay, the inefficiency, or the assignment of a wrong level of care. Immediate measurement of the conformance to our standard of care can be acted upon toward the goal of decreasing levels of inappropriate care. In summary, our efforts to begin to contemplate new levels of organizational excellence by building this framework of fundamental integrity and quality control into our compliance efforts, build risk awareness and management practices into the enterprise, standardizing into a common platforms, and an improvement capability to reduce waste, inefficiency, and improve flow have really led us to this point today in our journey. I will now turn the discussion over to Kathy for more exciting information and examples.
Everyone, it looks like we've lost Kathy Rick. We're going to try to get her back on the line really quickly, so just please hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Kathy, if you can hear us, if you want to go ahead and log back into the GoToWebinar session, that should allow you to speak through your system again.
Well, we're getting Kathy back on the phone. Why don't we field some questions over to Roxanne, if that's okay, Roxanne?
Absolutely, absolutely. I was going to suggest that, but I was yielding to you.
Okay, so in your presentation, you mentioned a little bit about situational awareness. Could you please provide a little bit of a definition about what you mean by situational awareness?
Yes, that's an excellent, it's an excellent question. And situational awareness, and I know that this is a very complicated topic with very little time to discuss this, but I really think that, as I mentioned, situational awareness and this whole notion of mindfulness is really fundamental to a high reliability organization. And high reliability systems demonstrate at the most fundamental level the capacity, as I mentioned, for containment and resilience. They develop the maximum capacity to catch, correct, and learn from the surprises as they arise. Known as the state of mindfulness, as we just talked about, mindfulness implies that as an organization, we see more clearly, not harder and longer. And a mindful organization really facilitates the discovery and correction of unexpected events that are capable of escalating to a system failure. Every member of a mindful organization is responsible for scanning the environment for unexpected events that may jeopardize safety. This situational awareness, as you just asked about, and this environmental scanning and the tendency not to simplify really provides a perfect environment in which risk awareness and uncertainty management frameworks really take hold.
Great.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense, and that was a very great answer. I do have another question that popped up, and one is related to the frameworks that you utilize within the VA, and was wondering if you felt that there were certain things that were specific that allowed these frameworks to be put into place a little bit more easier in a VA system, or you think that these frameworks could be generalizable to a non-VA type of setting and be generalized to larger or other clinical settings within the entire U.S. population?
Yes, I believe, and thank you for the question, and I hope I didn't say VHA too much, because you are absolutely correct to the person that asked the question. These are very generalizable, and in fact, if you look at our VA TAMICS model, you really see for a moment that it is really just a PDSA cycle, and it combines the vision, the leadership, the strategic alignment, and really promotes the capability to improve in a PDSA cycle, whether you use Lean, Six Sigma, or others. I think the only other piece of the discipline that we've inserted in that notion is really the notion of ISO 9000. And many of you may already have started that journey, but it's one thing to improve, but it needs to be combined with also the discipline to become internal, have internal controls that will alert you before system failures occur, so that you catch and identify potential risks before they begin to occur. The discipline of ISO that we've infused throughout the system can be done locally, can be done at the team level, at the bedside, it can be done at the department level, and in fact, that's probably where it's most successful. And so easily the ISO concept could be inserted there. And then the enterprise risk management is just industry standard. If you look in finance, energy, industries, others, they're all moving to an ERM approach. Mm-hmm. And so definitely, wholeheartedly, the answer to the caller's question is yes.
Great, great, great. Another question comes in regards to the, again, with the frameworks. Did you kind of have an a priori knowledge of the frameworks you wanted to use, or was it kind of what guided your selection of these type of frameworks? Did you have an idea of what might possibly work or wouldn't work, or was it some trial and error that went on with this?
There was some trial and error in terms of our VA TAMICS model, and in fact, and please interrupt me if Kathy is able to get back online. The VA TAMICS model was somewhat of a trial and error, and we realized for the first several years that we allowed our facilities to pick any improvement model. And for us as an integrated healthcare delivery system, and for you, many of your healthcare delivery systems that may be integrated or regionalized, or somewhat have a corporate entity involved in them, or maybe working in the context of the community, you probably would benefit from at least coming together in some common language and terms. We made the conscious decision to really commit to a framework that would transcend all of our organization so that we'd be talking a common language and common systems. The ISO framework, however, is really industry standard, and that probably is not negotiable. So we accepted the ISO standard nomenclature, taxonomies, and so forth. The VA TAMICS was developed iteratively over the course of time in the context of VHA. But it easily crosswalks and maps to Lean, Six Sigma, and other types of, and the Baldrige framework, frankly. So that's why I put that on that one slide to show you those relationships in a very iterative way.
Okay. I do have another question, but Roxanne, if you feel comfortable, do you want to go ahead and continue with Kathy's slides, or would you like to go ahead and answer some more questions?
Hear me now.
I think Kathy is on. There's
You're
there's
on,
her
Kathy.
Voice.
All right, great.
Wow, after all of our practice and testing the systems, this had to happen live. So sorry about that, folks in the audience, but I was able to hear the questions and Roxanne's responses, so I think you used the time very well. So let me start off by thanking you, obviously, for joining us today and indicating that I feel very privileged and honored to be a member of the ISRN Steering Council and have had a wonderful experience that has helped me understand improvement science, and I encourage you to get engaged or stay engaged with ISRN so that you can join that journey. As I've worked with the council and others through the work of the council, I've really come to learn that improvement science is really about improving patient outcomes, obviously, and managing variability through evidence-based care and evidence-based management, with high-performing organizations reducing risks and with high reliability, as Roxanne touched on so well. Improvement science is not a single program, from my perspective, or a single act. It is really an umbrella for multiple components, such as implementation science, dissemination approaches, and translation initiatives and sciences. Improvement science, I believe, is the foundation for sustainment of best practices and improving patient outcomes. It really requires the development of a climate or a culture that we've been talking about, staff ownership at all levels. Culture meaning behaviors, and that is what culture is all about. The culture of improving our work is our work, from our perspective, really matters much more than programs, and leadership actually counts much more than measures from our experience. And hopefully you have had similar experiences or can perhaps benefit from some of the information that we've been sharing. Leadership really does require engaged communication and visible passion, as well as visible involvement at all levels. And that is the macro system at the largest aspect of the organization, the meso system, which is at the middle layer, and micro system, which is really at the point of care or at the point of business, depending on what aspect of healthcare you're looking at. EHA actually began at a macro system level, as most of you do, looking at strategic planning, and convened a summit of national officials to develop the architecture for our Bridge to Excellence journey. As you often do, we followed that by a senior leadership conference and addressed that at a middle management or meso system level, defining the foundation, and then followed that with an improvement forum comprised of point of care microsystem leaders to really build that bridge using improvement science principles. So let's start with that first slide, and I'll try and catch up on some time here as well. I plan on reviewing some examples that are probably near and dear to your heart as well, and describe some of our experience and align those with the ISRN four focused areas of focus for research. The first example that I'll share has to do with our medical home model, which we refer to as the patient-aligned care team. And that is closely aligned with the ISRN focus areas of care coordination and transitions, and the second ISRN focus area of evidence-based quality improvement and best practices. Next, I'll talk about a couple of our examples that relate to practice and academic environments, really focusing on the ISRN focus area of learning organizations and a culture of quality and safety. Lastly, I'll end with an example of the clinical nurse leader role that is being implemented industry-wide as an example of the ISRN focus area of high-performing clinical systems and microsystems approaches to improvement. Now, before I share those examples, I'll just do a very quick overview, since we lost a little time, about how continuous capability and improvement science is really everything to do about improving our work is our work. So the next slide just summarizes enterprise management of quality, safety, and value that Roxanne highlighted, moving from the very early signs of engagement of people across the care continuum, as well as across the organizational, meso, macro, and micro systems, from just needing education and awareness when you're at a learning platform stage to the robust improvement science organization that is really a learning organization, whereas all staff and leaders are teachers. We have empowered interdisciplinary and interprofessional teams with a self-sustaining culture of improvement. And the next slide just reiterates the culture of improvement and the importance of the trajectory of leadership's will to change, and that is leadership at all levels, macro, meso, and microsystem, and the trajectory towards continuous improvement in a sustainable fashion by leadership at all levels launching improvement projects using the mission, infrastructure, process, and values principles that Roxanne covered, and moving towards a complete learning organization through those efforts. So So before I get into sharing examples, I have a polling question to just get a sense of your understanding and your experience about the various levels of responsibility in this endeavor. So at what level of your organization have you encountered the most challenging hurdles related to improvement science? A, at the leadership macro system level, B, at the middle management or mesosystem level, C, at the point of care individual worker or microsystem level, or D, all of the above? All right. So it looks like all of the above is a winner there, no surprise to anyone. And quite frankly, I would agree with the distribution and our experience that the larger challenge is really at the individual worker and microsystem level, although your responses indicate that it's pretty well distributed across all levels. Our experience has been that it is mostly at that microsystem level that creates the biggest challenge, and so we have focused recent efforts on that area. So let's launch into, on the next slide, the first example that I have to share as an example related to the industry medical home model that is being launched across the healthcare industry, that is. So our aim and our patient-aligned care teams, we refer to it as a patient-aligned care team to balance off the questions about what does medical home mean. Patient-aligned care teams mean that the aim is really to redesign our care delivery model in partnership with patients, so creating a pact, if you will, with our patients, improving the access to care using varied methods, coordinating care among team members, and really focusing on team-based care with continuity and team-based care with veterans at the center of their pact. At the macro system, when we launched this, we developed a national program with strategies as an input to related to the high reliability framework, and at the mesosystem engaged regional teams to develop approaches to impact improvement efforts at the microsystem at the point of care. The Office of Nursing Services specific strategies used our national shared governance model and engaged bidirectional communication to enhance local spread. We used that process to help with role definitions, core competencies, and care management curriculum that was developed by our clinical advisors at a national level. Really has proven to be a good approach. The next slide reviews the measurement activities that we've aligned with our PACT initiative, really providing direction for PACT and focusing on existing VHA data on the patient-aligned care team initiative, measuring select measures that are selected specifically for primary care and the medical home model that is being implemented, aligned with accountable care organizations, and using existing VA data sources and data reports. And this analysis and process is related to the high reliability, related to the process elements of the high reliability framework. It's designed for assessment and guidance, and at the macro system level, we standardize these measures. At the mesosystem level, we require regional review and oversight and support. And at the microsystem level, really allow for and encourage local control, responsibility, and flexibility for the variances at a local level. The next slide gives you an idea about the how we use the PACT compass as to guide our analysis. I won't go into the detail of each of these elements, but we look at panel management, patient engagement and satisfaction, continuity, access, coordination, and clinical improvement. And for the sake of time, I think I'll just move on to the next slide to show you some of the data that we look at from a national perspective. This isn't as granular as you would see at a local level, so you don't see the trajectory and trends of impact as clearly at a national level because of the normalization across the region and local. But each site has regional and local specificity for their monitoring and feedback. And you'll see in the bottom right corner that the initiative has really shown that we have well aligned with the anticipation of moving in the direction of a strong medical home model using our PACT initiative. And you'll see that there's a downward trend in inpatient admission rates, as well as moving in the right direction for post-discharge contacts. These are all well aligned with the four priority areas of ISRM. The next example, the two examples have to do with thank you for moving to the next slide. The VA Centers of Excellence is aligned with the patient-aligned care teams. I keep saying aligned. I guess we are very strongly focused on alignment here. The VA Centers of Excellence are an initiative that we've put in place to focus on achieving a practice academic partnership that supports primary care, looking at interprofessional education and innovative approaches to team-based collaborative care and shared decision-making. The shared decision-making is focused not only among the team members, but also the team members and with patients. You'll see the natural alignment with the triple aim and accountable care organizations in this coordinated effort as well. And it really highlights improving our work is our work as our theme and our motto and our mantra. And the next slide, the VA Centers of Excellence have described as focusing on improvement at the macro system level by developing and testing these innovative approaches for curricula and patient-centered care, along with the impact of study and new educational approaches and models for health professionals, but really impacts, anticipated impacts at a microsystem level by having well-prepared future health professionals in varied health occupations. The approaches that we're using have to do with team collaboration, cultural shifts in education priorities, education and workforce outcomes, and the domains of academic focus are on shared decision-making, sustained relationships, interprofessional collaboration again, and performance improvement initiatives, much like the improvement science. The next slide highlights an academic partnership within the nursing community. We're at the fifth year of our five-year pilot for a VA Nursing Academy. The Academy, funded at a significant level, has engaged 15 VA nursing school partnerships with having the goals of hiring additional nursing faculty or increasing the availability of nursing faculty by offering VA staff and faculty members, increasing student enrollment to address the future needs of nurse staffing, and enhancing faculty and clinical staff development while promoting educational and clinical innovations. The overarching program, again, was described, and the evaluation of the program is at a macro system level, whereas the partnership sites are seen to be at the mesosystem level. And as you might guess, the real work happens at the microsystem level, where individual faculty, students, and VA staff make the best practices happen. The next slide does talk about some of those impacts. Enhanced care with our veterans by increasing our evidence-based practice culture and approaches through special projects and research. The enhanced affiliations with nursing schools has really increased our recruitment and retention efforts as well. More students and staff and more nursing units are involved in this forward-thinking education approach and enhanced nursing opportunities for VA nurses to be academic faculty and preceptors. The next slide really focuses on an overview of the components that we built this innovative approach on. And I'm not going to go into detail of this, but want to draw your attention to my perspective of this program really building a culture of improving our work, being our work, and having gained, really had a net gain of our initial investment of significant dollars. And we actually have a number of examples that I'll share just a couple with you. One being a School of Engineering collaborating with our nursing school as well as our VA clinical site, looking at an education program that engages engineering and nursing team members to look at customized physical devices. Engineering students focus on technical details, specifications, and marketability and usefulness of products, and nursing students evaluate the patient's physical, emotional, and mental health needs through the design and implementation phase. Other examples are listed on the next slide, and some very specific targets of improvements not only in processes, but also in costs that have been avoided. The projects have focused on innovation, systems redesign, and implementation, And the few examples that you'll see there are preventing pressure ulcers and early mobility of cardiothoracic patients, cardiothoracic surgery patients, reducing length of stay, reducing ventilation, ventilator hours, and having resulted in zero complications. So let's move on to the next slide. ISRM priority area of high-performing clinical microsystems at the microsystem approach. And this is, I think, one of the most exciting endeavors that the healthcare industry is launching from a nursing perspective, because this is really where the rubber meets the road, where the clinical nurse leader, as an advanced generalist with a master's level preparation in nursing, helps define practice through leadership in team-based care, implementation of evidence-based practice, focusing on that mindfulness that we talked about earlier by risk anticipation and risk avoidance, identifying and collecting care outcomes. The clinical nurse leader really comes with the competencies for using the right tools for the issues at hand, a very systematic, disciplined approach to improving our work. Really engages highly skilled clinicians, these clinical nurse leaders, in an outcomes-based practice and improvement strategy approach. This microsystem support is also needs to be considered not just for the clinical nurse leader initiative, but for all initiatives. Senior leaders need to consider how staffing methodology for all personnel, but for us nursing personnel, we have launched the process of a methodology that includes time allocation that is dedicated specifically to improvement activities in our staffing plans, so that it is not something that is assumed, but it is planned for. The CNL microsystem impact is highlighted on the next slide, increasing patient and staff satisfaction, not just nursing satisfaction, but all staff, and decreasing fall rates, pressure ulcers, and nosocomial infections, really improving financial gains and bridging communication gaps. The continuity and transitions of care have improved through improved strategies for care handoffs, primarily focusing on teamwork and critical thinking, and significantly reducing nurse turnover. This responsibility of the clinical nurse leader has had a significant impact on lateral integration and puts evidence-based practice into action. There are two examples in the next two slides that provide specific examples of clinical nurse leader improvements, not necessarily unique to the VA at all, by reducing hospital-acquired infections and linking pay-to-performance and accountable care initiatives through the work of the CNL, really showing the evidence of important impact of the CNL as a microsystem entity. The second example has to do with the improvements related to patient education on mental health units. With a simple change through clinical nurse leaders' use of PDSA approach, Plan, Do, Study, Act approach, have implemented changes that have drastically improved patients' understanding of their diagnosis, their medication, and crisis intervention or crisis management from a self-care perspective. What I want to get back to in the last two slides are back to a proven conceptual framework and operational approach that really gets results. Obviously, as Roxanne mentioned earlier in response to a question, that this is not VA specific. The triple aim approach is something that really helps put the framework around the kind of work that needs to be done. If you can imagine each of these concentric circles getting closer together with greater overlap, you could envision the greater value added, and that is really where we suggest things head in the healthcare industry. And lastly, I want to bring us back to our best advice from our experience, the enterprise management of quality, safety, and value. I'm not going to go over the details of this slide again, but draw your attention to the clinical nurse leader's role in that mindfulness section and the reliability section, really focusing on medical home initiatives. Our specific initiative is the patient-aligned care team. And the fulfillment, from my perspective, I think some of our best examples and observations in the industry as a fully learning organization are those practice academic examples. The two that I shared with you have to do with the partnerships that VA has move toward. I think that this model, as I said, being our best vice, really helps align with the path forward in moving towards accountable care organizations, sharing risks, improving care and access, and smoothing care transitions. I want to end with a special thank you to Alyssa Nelson, who is an administrative fellow in the Office of Nursing Services, who really helped pull our presentation together today. And I welcome any comments or questions as I turn it back to Frank.
Thank you very much, Kathy and Roxanne. That was a very exciting discussion and an interesting conversation on how improving our work is the work of everyone from the individual to the system. Given that we answered some questions earlier, I think we have time for maybe one or two questions. So I'm going to go ahead and field these to you all. The first question has to do with, can you elaborate a little bit more on the individual education and the information that nurses received in order to perform the responses given to build towards a system of improvement?
Sure. I think primarily it really focuses on the understanding of not only the tools that are needed and using the right tools for the right situations, but the analytics related to that. So the data management, the data mining capability, and the analytics related to that. So we take advantage of the unbelievable talent that we have in our system and rely on those who have those specialized talents to help with preparing their expertise in those concepts of analytics and really the mindfulness of risk awareness and creating a culture of safety in raising those risks as well. And Roxanne might have something to add to that as well.
I think that is absolutely right. And we do actually use a formal collaborative model where we learn, experiment, grow, and then come back to collective issues with like types of improvement project groups across the country. And during those face-to-face and also virtually, we do intersect and infuse a variety of techniques, tools, and prepare the workforce for a toolkit of things that they could use to apply and leverage in their daily work and improving their work.
The one other thing that I would add to that has to do with teamwork. You know, we all have talked about teamwork and the importance of teamwork throughout all of our careers, but it doesn't happen naturally, and working in teams doesn't necessarily equal teamwork. So there is a science to that, and there are strategies that need to be deployed in order to really understand the culture of various disciplines across within a team and across teams in order to bridge the gaps of experiences as well as in disciplinary specific cultures and approaches.
Right. That was a very great answer. And, you know, it's great to hear that, especially since the ISRN really embraces a lot of the teamwork in terms of the way we study the improvement science and the way that we look and investigate the ways healthcare delivery teams work together to deliver, you know, good quality care. But I'm afraid that we're out of time now, and we want to end this right coming clock at 2 o'clock hour. So I want to thank everybody for joining us today. We really value your feedback and hope that you can spend a few minutes completing the evaluation form that's about to appear on your screen. We also encourage you to attend our summer conferences in San Antonio, Texas that are hosted by the ISRN. And also want to emphasize that the ISRN is a growing network of researchers, academicians, and healthcare providers. And we continue to accept membership applications and invite you to become a member if you're not already. So to learn more about these and many more opportunities, please visit the Improvement Science Research Network website, and please read the ISRN's newsletter, Network News. Again, we thank you for your participation in today's webinar, and we hope that you have a good afternoon.
The organize.